And today we're going to air an interview that was conducted by Desiree Mays, whom many of you know from the opera series. She writes the book every year called Opera Unveiled, and she had the wonderful opportunity to interview the only living composer at the Santa Fe Opera this year and the conductor of that opera. His opera, Dr. Sun Yat-sen, is being performed tomorrow night at the Santa Fe Opera, as well as on the 8th and 14th of August. Let's go now to Desiree Mays.
Hello, this is Desiree Mays. My guest today is Huang Rohr, the composer of Dr. Sun Yat-sen, which has its American premiere here at the Santa Fe Opera this summer. There are three more performances on July 30th, August 8th, and August 14th. Welcome, Huang Rohr. We're thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to start at the beginning a little bit. You were born in China, in Hainan, and how did you get into music? You were born, I understand, as the Cultural Revolution ended, which was probably a blessing.
In that sense, yes.
Yeah. So how did you get from those very early years and how study music and then come to the States?
In my family, my father is a composer as well, and my mother, although is a doctor, but she loves singing, loves dancing. So I grew up in a musical environment. Although my father didn't really teach me too much composition, but he did, he played music around, so I always listening to songs and music. And one thing he did very, very well is he sent me to Shanghai when I was 12, and I spent 6 years studying composition in the Shanghai Conservatory of Music.
And then how did you make the leap to the States?
In 1995, I won two competitions that year. One is called Henry Mancini Award, given in Switzerland. So I won that award, and I was giving some money to be able to fund my studies.
Scholarships.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I also won a competition at Oberlin Conservatory of Music. They invited me to for the premiere of my piece, and I went that winter in December of 1995, and I fell in love with the school and
it's a great
level.
Musical
exactly.
school for music,
and also the freedom of to create, and although it's in Ohio, middle of nowhere, but it's so inspiring to be there. So I decided to stay to start my college education.
Did you find the same freedom at Juilliard later?
Same, but although it's different. Mm. And when I was very happy. I did my undergrad at Oberlin. That's my formative years. And after living in Shanghai, which is a big city like New York, and I live in Oberlin, where is the 1.5 streets. Mm. That's what I would call
it. That's a contrast.
But it helped me to focus and to develop my craftsmanship. And when I went to Juilliard for my master's and PhD, I was formed as a composer. Mm. So being in New York and studying at Juilliard and Lincoln Center was my best plan. At that moment.
And you were young, you were 20s still at this point.
That's right, yeah.
So let's get into Dr. Sun Yat-sen. Mm-hmm. What was the germ of the idea of how did you begin to take on this vast subject?
It is what I call a vast opera or grand opera in that sense. You have a chorus, you have, seven leads, and you have minor roles, and you have a full orchestra, and dancers, this and that. It was my first opera, so it wasn't an easy task. Every opera started with an idea. So in this case, I had this idea of to create an opera that focuses on a subject that has an interesting story, but also it is a famous famous subject also, so it could ring echo with audiences. So in this case, when Opera Hong Kong decided to commission me to create a new opera for them. It was their first commission to create a new opera. So, and it was my first opera. So there are many things that being the first.
The first.
And that was the excitement. So they were able to say, hey, we want to commission a full-scale opera.
And did they want a Chinese subject?
They do, in that sense. And I also think, you know, since the opera was commissioned, you know, by Opera Hong Kong, the audience are Chinese. Having a Chinese subject will be appropriate. So I suggested Dr. Sun Yat-sen being the subject. The reason is he is a very well-known household name for all Chinese people around the world. And he obviously is the founding father of the modern China or of the nation. Was well regarded and is still very well respected by, you know, both mainland China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore. You know,
that in and of itself is a miracle, right?
Exactly.
The way things have worked
exactly.
out.
I mean, you can name any other leader could be equivalent to him. But I focused on his personal and human story. In that sense, that gave me an operatic you know, license.
Right, because taking a big canvas of the Chinese Revolution,
right.
I mean, there's no way you could put that on stage. And how interesting would it be, in fact? Sun Yat-sen is a new name for most of us. We all knew about a Chinese Revolution,
yes.
but had no idea. Most Americans, me included, when I started working on this piece, had really no idea. And the story is quite wonderful. But how did you get into it? I mean, how do you take this larger than life, as we see in the very end of the opera, incredible man who changed history for China, which is a vast country, and hone in on his story. How did you make, what were the threads, that, and when did you take on a librettist? Was that a collaborative event?
I was fortunate to be able to, you know, have the chance to find a librettist I like to work with, and in this case, you know, we picked cantus Muyang Chang, who is my same age and also very creative artist and live in Hong Kong. She came from a playwright background and very well versed and well educated in Chinese literature. So in this sense, I guess there was one sentence of what Sun Yat-sen said always stick in my mind. Is he once famously said, because of love, then comes revolution. So to me, that basically sums up why he was doing what he did. You know, although he was like kidnapped in London, for example, and being constantly, you know, trying to be captured by the Qing court and on exile most of his life, but his love to the people, his love to the country,
his sacrifice,
that's
self-serving,
right. And
was not self-serving,
and his love to his family, to his friends, to his wife.
You talk about the four levels of love in this opera, and that's intriguing, that you actually can differentiate, and they're all there in the music and in the drama.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about those levels, because they all flow from this one man, Sun Yat-sen.
And, you know, we started with his friendship with Charlie Song, and is a new friend he made, but Charlie is supporting him unconditionally. So the love is not only the love Sun Yat-sen loving someone, but also someone who loving him as well. They believe in him.
Yeah, well, love is a two-way street.
Exactly,
exactly.
So the opening scene with the party scene, they try to raise funding for building a church, as a cover, but underneath it, trying to raise funding for him to build modern China, to get rid of the Qing dynasty. So that takes a lot of love. And
trust.
And trust as well. So we have, you know, so that is the friendship, right? But Sun Yat-sen, who was married to an arranged marriage, and he didn't have true love with his first wife.
Right. Was it arranged in a Confucian manner, or was it a Christian
It wasn't a Christian.
It wasn't, okay.
But you see, that's the interesting thing, is because in China, it was a custom, at least in the old China, what we call, for a man, a rich man, or a well-respected man, could marry several wives, and you marry the first wife, second and third.
They were concubines.
They were concubines. Yes, and
though we call these, yes, so we don't really understand the system, I think, yeah. But it was allowed.
It was allowed.
So he had one wife of many years, right?
That's right.
And
yes.
Three children.
Mm-hmm. So, but Qing Lin came from a Christian family. Charlie Song is a Christian minister. And so to me and to Candace, my libertist, the break away from his old marriage and to embrace the new marriage, to go for the true love, it is as important as a revolution he started for China. Mm-hmm. Is his own, you know, in the libretto you hear, is this was his own personal revolution.
Yes, I'm a man, not God.
That's
a marvelous
right.
line.
Exactly.
And
I'm
it
only
actually
a man.
Puts the whole thing into perspective.
Exactly.
His own
He's
personal.
He's a man first, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And he loves, he hates. So like any other person. So in that sense, we show the conflict. We show the wedding, we show Charlie so angrily breaking the tie with him, but also surprising everyone to bring the first wife to the wedding, try to ruin the wedding, but also to a bigger surprise to everyone, the first wife being as, you know, as kind and as great as who she is.
Lu Muzhen,
exactly.
Yes, yes.
She was willing to sign the divorce paper because she also believed in that was for Sun Yat-sen's best mission.
How close did you stay to the historical character of Lu Muzhen?
We stay as close as possible, I should say. And of course, there is a poetic license. And she did went to Japan, and she did agree to, you know.
Or she did. She actually did. What happens in the opera? She gives him his divorce.
That's right. But the thing is, I mean, I think historically she's even a larger person than the opera. She suggested to Sun Yat-sen. She say, you know, I would not mind for you to marry her as well as your, you know, second wife. You know, and she's willing to, you know, accept another woman come to the household as long as maintained the
which was not so strange in that culture then, because it was common for there to be more than one wife, whereas we believe in this monogamy. And actually Charlie Song throws that up at Sun Yat-sen at the wedding scene.
Yeah.
Says, you can't marry my daughter because you're already married. So there's a real conflict of cultures, religious cultures here.
Yeah. In that sense, being what Sun Yat-sen did, which is more like embracing the new system, the new China in his ideology. Combined.
From a Christian context, actually, because they were all Christians, Congregationalists, Methodists. So talk a little bit about the Song family and the three, not just one, but three daughters who were involved in the history of the revolution.
Big time, yes. Mm. So Charlie actually came from the same island I was born, Hainan Island. So his family was from Wenchang, Hainan Island. And he has three daughters, and each of them married to a very important man. So the oldest daughter called Song Ailing, who we said married the money because she married a banker, the Kong family. The second daughter is Qing Lin, who married her ideology, her belief.
Yes,
so she married Sun Yat-sen, although he was not as successful as a leader.
Yes, and when she meets him, there is that sense she's fallen in love with the manifestation of the ideals that she believes in, because she's learned them from her father.
Exactly.
All of these very close family relationships. You paint her with such sympathy and understanding in the music. She must have meant a lot to you.
To me, I personally think of opera is, you know, I need to portray different character with their own voice and differently. So Qing Lin is very different from Lu Muzhen, and is very different from Ni Guizhen, and also very different from Mrs. Umea. So there are four women here, and they should sing in their own, you know, different voice.
And do.
They do, and even the voice type. So Qing Lin, who is a mature than her age, right? So she just graduated from, a university in America.
Yeah, Wesleyan in Georgia.
That's right.
I mean, she goes back. She's just out of school.
So early 20s,
yes,
right?
And falls in love with this older man who was seeking revolution. No wonder her father was upset.
So, as the father, also, later on, if we really think about it, the age is one factor, yes. But I think Charlie, the father's real worry is also he loved the daughter so much and he doesn't want the daughter to live a life as Sun Yat-sen, being on exile all the time, running for their life. And in fact, Qing Ling did lose a baby from the running away from assassins. And because of that, she could never bear a child. So the father's worry was correct. He has the right to do that.
Yes.
And but Qing Ling was able to convince him why she really loves Sun Yat-sen, not just because he's a great man, but also there is love there.
There's a beautiful moment in the opera where Sun Yat-sen gives her the wedding gift and explains that there is nothing he can offer her. I love that because it's a very universal moment of young, two people who are maybe not perfectly matched, it might seem, and there's nothing they can offer one another except love. You have that wonderful universal language in this opera. It's clearly set in China, and one thing that I was blown away by was the very beautiful staging that the Santa Fe Opera has excelled itself yet again, using Our Night Sky. How did that decision come in? Talk a little bit about the sets and the wonderful bamboo sets, which I understand is a Chinese way of dressing a stage.
Well, the bamboo scaffolders is a Chinese way of building buildings. No matter how tall the building is, you always see these bamboo scaffolders and workers just, walking
all over them like bees. Yes,
right. So, and yes, we have a lot of bamboos. So in that sense, I think that definitely have a very strong Chinese presence there. But from the director's point of view, at least from my understanding, is, I met with Jim Robinson when we were talking about the opera, and he told me later on, he said, one thing I talked to him about really strikes him and what make him come up with this thought is, I said, Sun Yat-sen lived in a time where China was destroyed and being rebuilt. So he came up with, this production of a construction site. Both he and Alan, who's our senior designer. So in a way, it was never finished. So if you look at the bamboo construction site, it was always there, always being built. And we don't really see what he's building, but because we have this opera, then we understand he's building China. So that message is why.
In the bamboo scaffolding, it's marvelous. It's really a metaphor for the building that's going on, and actually never stops. Even as we speak, there is change and movement on in terms of the building, and even the stage. That stage on the stage looked quite Chinese to me. It's not a typical stage that we would use. And then the way the revolver is used here, you shift from China to Shanghai to Yokohama. That's something really to see. And then using our beautiful sky upstage works well. It's risky, I know, because you never know what you're going to get up here.
True. And I mean, in the Japan scene, we started with, they're looking at the mountain, they're looking at the landscape. So that scenery was in the opera. And I mean, what else is more magical than really show that in the set?
And that's always in the poetry of Japan, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us the little story of the wedding dress, because that's captivating. And I think, was that one of the ways you got into this piece, the wedding dress story?
Well, the wedding dress story actually came to us later. And again, it's a true story of, Charlie gave Qing Ling the wedding dress as the gift, but after the wedding, after he...
Because he had fallen out with both of them at the time.
That's right, and the dress was very important. And, one part of the story we could not tell and did not tell in the opera, because we have limited time and focus, is Qing Ling actually gave the dress to a good friend of theirs to sell it for revolution needs.
For money.
That's right. Because for her, that shows who she is.
Yes.
For her, although it's a very dear gift from her father, but what comes as a priority, is the mission. right, of revolution. So, but the friend, the Japanese friend of theirs, did not sell it and actually kept it because they know how precious this is.
So where is the dress now?
The dress, I believe, was donated to a
museum.
It's a museum.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember which museum, but it was not sold, but was donated as
a
gift.
It's a great idea.
That's right. Yeah, so they kept it. So there's so many fascinating stories around the opera, and to me, that moment when the father, mother, and daughter, the trio in
at
the last
end.
Scene. Although Sun Yat-sen was not there with them, but it
in spirit
reflects
he was,
who
yes.
Yeah.
He was there because he was the center of all of their lives.
That's right. Because sometimes you don't need everyone to say how good you are. You want to hear other people to tell your story as well.
Yes.
And in fact, we are trying to show the true person as Sun Yat-sen. He has his good side and he has also his weakness. And through this opera, we see a real person, how he became a leader. So that is opera.
Who actually died, didn't he, in real life shortly before
the
revolution?
They were married
succeeded.
For 10 years. So and after he passed away, Qin Ling never married another person. So in that sense, there was a short love, but it was a true love they had. So I was happy to be able to show that moment in the opera.
It is special. Say a little word, we don't have a lot of time, about your trained in East and Western styles. Say a little bit about yourself, because the first question is always asked, how is the music? This is what it's really all about. It's about opera and music.
Yeah.
Say a word or two about that.
Well, I was growing up in China in the 80s, where, right after the Cultural Revolution, and China has many newness things coming in, including Western music, rock music, pop music, and also traditional Chinese music were also allowed to flourish again. So my training is just to observe. I observe any song I hear, any music I hear. I remember my father sent me a cassette tape, on one side was Stravinsky's Rite of the Spring, and on the B side of the cassette tape was Bach's Brandenburg Concerto. So to me, they're all new. So I was able to learn that instead of put them into, this is greater music, this is lesser music. I never think about it that way. They all sound fascinating to me. So it was my decision to come to U.S. to study, and that also gave me a great deal of Western education on both classical music and also contemporary music. But what we say in Chinese is, when you are away from the mountain, when you are outside of the mountain, you can see the mountain better and clear. So because of I left China, it helped me to see exactly what China is and what our culture, what our tradition was, and so helped me to even learn more about our culture. So I never let go of that part. But when I write music, I want to say I write in my own voice, my own original voice from my own journey, and I never thought about, this is Chinese elements, so let me collage that with European avant-garde and American jazz.
No, it all,
So
works.
To me, I don't think about
it
that way. I just breathe the air. I breathe out the air naturally. No matter what the style people like to call it, it is my own style. And I don't deny the influence of other culture, and I also don't intentionally to collage them. So I do hope that will come across in the opera.
Well, thank you for sharing our opera and this time with us.
Thank
and
you.
Your family, Huang Ru. Your parents are here,
That's
I understand,
right.
from China.
That's right.
And
yeah.
your wife and your one-year-old. Have family all around you here. This
yes.
is a good place for that. So, So thank you for joining us on the Radio Cafe today.
Thank you for having me.
We wish you every success with this wonderful piece, whether it's here or wherever. And
thank you so
we
much.
Thought to finish that we would play a little of Qing Ling's aria.
Great.
There are three performances remaining of Dr. Sun Yat-sen on July 30th, August 8th, and 14th. Don't miss this wonderful piece. So call the Santa Fe Opera box office or go online to santafeopera.org for tickets. This is Desiree Mays. So thank you so much, Huang Rua, composer of Dr. Sun Yat-sen. And let's listen to a little of Qing Ling's aria.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Radio Cafe. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.